Okay, Generative Energy, number 82, with Ray Peet and Georgi Dinkov. And Ray, you were just saying you were reading about the war, and so I'm sure to the chagrin, is that the right phrasing, to everybody that hated the last time we talked about this stuff, I do want to talk about the Ukraine and Russia once again. So give us, I don't know, give us maybe an update of your point of view and everything you've learned or that's transpired since then and where you think this is all heading, et cetera.
I actually think it's all a piece with the pandemic. I think all of it was planned out years ahead to do anything to destroy the economy so that the monopolies will have total power.
And so like a planned out war, do you think if they said, oh, if we do this, then Russia will do that? It's like that planned out to a T?
Yeah, I've read two or three articles, different people predicting exactly what's happening now in Ukraine and Europe 8 years ago.
Oh, well.
Do you think China and Russia are also kind of benefiting from this war too? They're using it to cover their own political and economic problems.
Definitely the likely outcome if they don't resort to nuclear war will be for Russia and China to totally dominate the world economy, and that's why the World Economic Forum class is in such a panic now for at least 10 years.
How close do you think we are to nuclear war? What is the likelihood of that happening in your point of view?
The chances within the next 2 hours are moderate and increasing from then, unless there's a dramatic reason for settling and establishing peace in Ukraine.
What did something happen in the few hours ago, or today, or yesterday?
No, just the last several days. Everyone's intention has been expressed, and they are starting to realize that Russia so far has definitely been winning, and that they're on the threshold of totally losing the empire, and for it to just for the whole world to start reorienting around the Asian economic system.
Something we might have touched on last time we talked, but I have since done a mild amount of investigation into. But apparently the CIA was like supporting all those white nationalist groups in the Ukraine. And so maybe we didn't touch on the CIA connection. You know, we've been talking about the CIA for at least a little while now. And what do you think about that? Like, does that make the whole situation a little bit more clear if a person is under the impression that the CIA is kind of the tool of the ruling elite, and then they've been for 50 years supporting the white nationalist groups in the Ukraine?
And remember when we talked about World War II and the outcome, why the Cold War started, the Dulleses and Bushes and the banker class in general was working, creating Hitler for their basic purpose. Since the First World War, the basic purpose of the ruling class is to get access to Russia's resources without the Russians. That's been on the record for a long time. The Germans had the documents saying that the Russians who couldn't be slave labor would be sent off to starve in Siberia, so essentially eliminating the population so that Germany could have the resources, but the United Kingdom and the U.S. Weren't happy with that falling solely into the Germans' control. So that they worked with Hitler, supported his war against Russia to the extent that they figured they could destroy Russia and then take on Germany. And all of that was in place behind the scenes during Roosevelt's management of the war. Both England and the U.S. were stalling month after month, joining the war. Stalin said, "What was it raining too much for you to invade the continent?" finally, when they saw that Russia was just driving straight through to the west, that was when they invaded to stop the Russians halfway. Just instantly when Roosevelt died, that faction represented by Harry Truman was in control. And so since Truman, the support of the Nazis and working with the Nazis everywhere, Ukrainians and Hungarian fascists, Polish fascists, everyone who lost their power temporarily in Europe moved to North America, mostly Canada and U.S., and now those people are adding their weight to American policy. Ukrainian fascists have been in business right since they allied themselves with Hitler during the war.
Just to be clear, I think we have talked about this before, but Nazism, the huge problem with it, in your view, is the eugenicist aspect of it. Because if you like Trump now, you're like a Nazi or something. So just to clarify that term.
No, it's a whole scheme for the World Economic Forum type, the absolute ruling class, to control everything, mm-hmm. Not just genocide is just something along the way to make that happen and become stable. Mm-hmm. But it's the idea of ruling the world. Mm-hmm.
And then, Georgie, interrupt at any time. A comment I received multiple times after last conversation was like, what is Ray talking about here? You know, isn't he anti-war? And so how do you...
A few days ago, Trump put out a statement saying that for the good of the world, peace has to be established in Ukraine. And he's supporting two anti-war candidates for Congress, and so part of his being called a Nazi is that he's against war.
Mm-hmm. But I guess in the empire game, there isn't really a way to be like a pacifist or like I know you don't think, or I don't know. Do you think violence is like necessary, or maybe for the elites to use violence to I don't know what do you think about that? Like, you're not happy that people are dying in the Ukraine or Russia, right?
I no, the sooner they can stop it, as Trump said, peace in the Ukraine is the central world issue right now.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, but at the same time, without this war, the empire would have relentlessly continued subjugating and crushing everything in its path.
Putin has said that the outcome looks like it's going to be ending the Western hegemony.
And what do you think that will manifest as?
Well, if the without the Asian and the Russian and the Indian economy, if they form a new center, and if that's the new economic center, what is the Western world going to do with its collapsing / non-existent economy? I mean, wouldn't that mean collapse? And in that case, the elite loses its power?
I'm afraid it will turn into something much less than a third world that the Shah of Iran might be a model for the government of the West.
But why? I mean, if there's a widespread economic collapse, in other words, if basically, where is this power of the elite? What is it going to be based on if all of their money suddenly is worthless? I mean, all of their possessions abroad will probably be confiscated, as Russia has already started doing. Chinese will probably follow suit soon enough. And then if basically the world dumps the Western model, doesn't the power of the elite disappear as well? The only thing they have remaining is weapons.
They'll declare the common people their enemy, like the Shah of Iran did.
Oh, wow. So basically they'll start cannibalizing each other as a way of maintaining power.
I think so.
And wow. Not the first time we talked about this. Where does Israel play into this whole empire game? Do you see them as just kind of regulating the U.S.'s activities, or how do they work into what's happening right now?
They are leaders in insisting that there are no Nazis in Ukraine, even though the leaders of the Azov factions fly swastikas and declare that they have all of the German Nazi symbols and salutes and phrases. It's impossible to say that they're not Nazis. But Israel is saying, since they aren't having Jewish genocide, at least not on a large scale, they can't be Nazis. That's the extent of Israel's reasoning about Nazism. They are practicing genocide against Russians. They right now aren't focusing on Jews, though they probably will eventually. People in Israel are talking about the Ukraine as the new Jerusalem, historically, arguing that it's an extension of Israel.
Is that a prophecy thing, or
I think it's the whole thing about the new Jerusalem. I've been hearing about it for many decades, but I don't really haven't investigated what the theological side is.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. So this could be part of a whole, like a biblical or Talmudic type of thing? This whole, mm-hmm. Yeah. Really shocking to find that stuff out. Go ahead, George.
A little bit back to the war. I mean, I keep coming back to this theme that if the West uses control of the world financial markets and of the world's productive resources and activity, then what is even the elite going to do with all of its fake money? I mean, it's how are they going to get the things that they need if almost nothing is produced in the developed world anymore? Isn't war essentially their only resort, basically, Third World War?
I think their plan is to use the military to control the basket of deplorables.
Us, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it will turn, just like you said, the Shah of Iran basically will be brutal dictatorship, the so-called Western world, and then food will be rationed or non-existent altogether. That's kind of where things are going?
Yeah, if you're a well-behaving robot, then your bank account will show enough for food.
Okay.
So we were talking about that a little bit before we hit the record button. I think people really don't like when we talk about this stuff, but don't offer any type of solution. And so we kind of understand the chess pieces that are being put in place in terms of like a digital ID and not being able to obtain food. And so I guess, how are you inoculating yourself from those types of things? Or what would you tell other people to maybe think about?
Oh, go on. Several people on the internet are giving instructions on how to make your own food, if necessary, growing it in your windowsill and on your roof and front yard instead of a lawn and so on.
And are there, from your point of view, are there things you could grow that are calorically dense enough to really make a dent in a person's diet, I guess?
Potatoes, really, on a moderate plot of land.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the fairly high-calorie root vegetables.
Mm-hmm. And just, I know we've talked about it before, but to run through them, like sugar, maybe buying gelatin, ghee, what else?
It's good to have a few years of that stuff stored up.
Maybe get a few beehives for them to produce honey?
If you have nearby vegetation that they can eat.
What do you think they'll allow, again, I'm asking you to speculate here, but do you think they'll allow like the cities to just become completely chaotic? Like a lot of those, maybe the Fabian Society, they have a motto of order through chaos. And so how crazy do you think they would let it get?
I think the police have the resources to keep everything, a lot of dead dissenters and other things, peaceful.
Mm. Okay, well, we can move on here unless, George, you have other questions. But what we didn't talk really about the vaccine stuff last episode. And so a lot has transpired, I think, since then. And so there are... You're probably familiar with them more than I am, but haven't some major landmark studies come out saying that the something we've been talking about probably since the beginning, that the spike protein would not be localized, that it would venture into every part of the body and cause harm? So is there anything you've learned since the last 2 months ago, last time we talked, that is interesting about the vaccines?
The weight of evidence is that... Bhakti and Eden were essentially right that it isn't just a temporary risk of death, but that it's a very prolonged, maybe lifelong or transgenerational risk of degenerative disease and death.
Did you see the new studies of the deadly hepatitis in children?
I didn't get that.
So over the last week, there have been news from all over the world, actually, from multiple countries, about the identification, a worrying rise of cases of hepatitis in children of unknown origin, and basically, it's so severe that about half of the children require liver transplants, and some children have already died.
No organ is exempt. And autopsies, not very many, but extremely clear evidence, microscopic and macroscopic evidence in the autopsies of continued presence of the spike protein months and up to a year after the vaccine. And evidence that they died of the vaccine with remote organs the blood vessels being infected by the spike RNA produced the antigen spike, and the immune system kills the lining of the blood vessels that are infected. And so there's a prolonged, maybe lifelong, attack of the immune system against your own blood vessels, leading to clots. And having microscopic or macroscopic clots in the various vessels can create a wide variety of very nasty diseases.
Are you familiar with the condition Kawasaki disease?
I'm not very familiar, but I know it's a clotting disorder.
Yeah, it's an inflammation, chronic inflammation of the blood vessels, and for basically the cases of this have been rapidly rising again over the last 2 years, and they're claiming they don't know what's causing it. Do you think the vaccines are capable of causing that?
I think any vaccine is capable of causing it. Just injecting aluminum hydroxide affects the brain. The particles travel not just into the bloodstream, but up the nerve axons into the brain cells themselves, modifying the brain so that the brain creates ongoing inflammation.
Kind of a weird question, but do you think the vaccines are more effective than the ruling elite thought, or less effective?
More effective than they imagined in their design, in the sense of killing people.
Mm-hmm. And you think that multi-schedule thing is to obscure the harm that they're doing, or like a? You're just saying that whole mechanism is like kind of a slow death, or it's going to accelerate any age-related problem the person happens, and so that's why it's a little bit ambiguous what specifically is going to happen to a person when they get one of those.
If you look at the newest information, both from the UK and some coming out of the U.S., the more shots a person has, the more likely they are to die or be hospitalized or be infected.
Mm-hmm.
One group of studies showed that with the two shots and a booster, you were twice as likely to die or be hospitalized. The others in the UK show a threefold increase in those serious outcomes for having the booster shot.
Kind of.
What do you think of the data coming out of the UK and Germany showing the potential that vaccines may cause vaccine-induced AIDS or VAIDS, as they call it?
I haven't seen those.
Okay. Well, but do you think they have the potential of causing chronic immune deficiency?
Chronic immune arousal is at the same time causing defective immunity.
So the body will be busy attacking its own inflamed tissues instead of being capable of handling a new infection from an unknown virus.
Autoimmune people are an example, a sort of mild example of what is probably happening to the mass of the vaccinated people.
Ray, you've been interacting with the public for a long time. Are you finding it harder and harder to do that, maybe since people are cumulatively becoming more crazy?
I would say people are becoming dumber. Let's just be blunt about it.
Has that been especially difficult maybe this year or last year?
I'm getting more emails than ever before, and extreme fanatics have stopped sending me threatening letters.
I just
maybe they got vaccinated. Maybe the vaccine did do something good after all.
Yeah. Like, I know you said it provides you information and orientation, but it doesn't take a toll on you or something like that? Is like communicating with totally crazy people, or you feel like it's your duty because you critique the culture, so you should support people and their fight against it, or how do you feel about the whole thing?
Yeah, as far as I can, I try to give them any available insight or support.
But even when that insight is like immediately turned around and posted on a forum and disregarded or something, I guess you could care less about what people are saying on the internet.
No.
Yeah. Okay. I guess how do you constructively use your time given that things are, it's so easy to spiral out of control or to be depressed about the whole situation?
I keep working to some extent on things I've been interested in for many years, mainly in the idea of ordering principles of the physics of life and potential. And I almost never talk about that because people don't often ask me, but I'm paying more and more attention to physical questions and what the possibilities are suggested by some of these eccentric physical ideas.
So for you, your work is the guiding principle of your life?
Work is?
Yeah, your work, what you feel like you need to accomplish.
It's all one piece, whether it's biology or physics or ideas about consciousness. Mm-hmm.
Georgie, interrupt me at any time. So we're we only have an hour with Ray today, so we're going to cut it pretty short here. But I had kind of like I don't know if there's maybe a fun question, but Ray, if a germ-free rat and who would win in a battle of enduring stress between a germ-free rat and an EFA, essential fatty acid, so-called deficient rat? And who do you think would win that?
Well, an EFA deficient.
And why do you think that?
The experiments that have been done, the germ-free live longer, healthier, but they don't have the powerful stress resistance that the fatty acid deficient rats have.
Is there something that can bind with and deactivate PUFA while it's in the bloodstream? I think you mentioned vitamin E once. I think it was Celia's idea or Brother Barnes, I forget. But is there any substance that can actually bind with those fatty acids and make them less harmful?
Not in the blood. I think it has to be the liver and kidneys excreting them.
All right, but I'm saying like so in terms of, we cannot really saturate them on demand while they're floating around in the blood, or binding them in a way that basically prevents them from doing their damage. This is only done in specific organs.
So far, it's only intestinal or rumen bacteria using vitamin E that can do that.
Okay. Do you think it's feasible to develop something that there are now drugs on the market that inhibit the absorption of all fats from the intestine? Do you think it would be possible to develop something that targets specifically the less saturated fats?
Yeah, I'm sure that would be possible because they have a greater tendency to absorb to certain surfaces.
Again, moving on subjects here, but I was watching a documentary on the cartels producing fentanyl, and I thought of your, what is it, Ray, the Biological Balance and Addiction newsletter you wrote many years ago. And so I was thinking about the fentanyl. Like, what is that having an anti-stress effect that makes people very addicted to it? And then maybe just explain your view of what happens when somebody's becomes so, like, using this in parentheses, but like addicted to a substance. What in your view that meaning behind that would be?
Some of it is a sense of freedom from social pain, a family that says they're worthless, or a society that makes them feel worthless, that they can just go into a dreamy state under the influence of morphine, for example. But the that is imitating in some ways the euphoria that good steroid hormones should be producing. And so the part of the predisposition to use the drugs is that the stressful social conditions they're in are turning up their harmful hormones and suppressing their own progesterone, DHEA, and pregnenolone. And that was how I found out that pregnenolone can help people withdraw pretty quickly from the opiates.
Quick question about pregnenolone. Why do you think no pharma company so far has tried to develop pregnenolone, or at least use it, or even in medicine, is a sort of like the mother of all hormone replacement therapies? I mean, if it's the precursor for all of them, wouldn't something like a transdermal cream or a suppository or some other kind of a product that basically contains pregnenolone be able to replace all of these other HRTs that are trying to sell to the public? Was there ever an attempt earlier in the 20th century to do that, or they never tried it?
In the early 1950s, there were studies showing that it's much better than cortisone or cortisol for the uses those have, anti-inflammatory and so on. But its role in the system makes it even worse than progesterone. Progesterone cures essentially everything, trauma, all of the degenerative and stress-related diseases. It's hormonally more powerful than pregnenolone, but pregnenolone has the same position in the system. When you take other hormones, the body's production of that hormone decreases. But in the case of progesterone and pregnenolone, those substances support the body's production of more up to their ability to make more. So if you're deficient in progesterone, sometimes a single dose or two can activate your body to return to normal production if you have the thyroid vitamin A and cholesterol needed. To a degree, the same situation with pregnenolone. It stabilizes the damaged mitochondria and makes it possible for yourselves to organize energy production and more pregnenolone and progesterone production. The drug companies first realized that the progesterone and DHEA were terrible drugs because they tend to cure diseases, and the effects of pregnenolone, there are no recognized hormonal effects. But if you have enough of it, in experiments, a rat, for example, would be given 10 grams per rat per dose of pregnenolone with no harmful effects except to stop stress hormone production. And so it's pregnenolone is a relatively expensive material if you supplement it adequately. And since it isn't patentable, those three steroids are something that it's just a matter of the cost of producing them and marketing them. They could essentially cure most of the current diseases if they were made available massively and cheaply. But that doesn't interest the drug companies because they don't have patents.
So I guess my question was pregnenolone ever considered by the drug companies even before they realized it's going to basically destroy their business? But was there ever a publication or a conference that you're aware of that a doctor stood up and said, hey, instead of giving all these people these individual hormones, here we have pregnenolone, which seems to be they call it the rate-limiting step to synthesizing everything else. Why bother trying to calculate this optimal dosage for, I don't know, estrogen, aldosterone, cortisol? Let's give everybody pregnenolone. Was this ever sort of like, was there ever a movement discussing this?
No. There was a symposium in 1950 that revealed the curative effects of pregnenolone and progesterone. But right in that same symposium, following an article on how I think it was progesterone in massive amounts was causing cervical cancer to disappear, that same journal published an article on treating cancer with estrogen, and their own data showed that estrogen caused the cancer to become worse, and they concluded that estrogen has great promise as a cancer therapy. The data, pharmacologists and the research community was intelligent enough to know that a drug that could cure a disease but not be patented was worthless.
Was there a symposium in Mexico where Sally, I think, had a presentation?
I think it might have been. It was published with Abraham White, I think, was the editor.
Yeah, I have that in a PDF. I think it was in Mexico, and there are a few studies on pregnenolone that were presented at that symposium.
I hate to bring it back to the Russia stuff, but I did think this last time and want to bring it up. Like, I think a lot of, at least like for myself, you know, I'm like trying to figure out what's going on, and I peruse my news sources to try to figure out what's going on in Ukraine, Russia, etc. But Ray, like in Mind and Tissue, you're talking about one of the themes of Russian culture has been the been that of the potential to waiting to be fulfilled, Russia waiting to lead the world into a spiritual awakening, the spiritual richness of peasants, etc. And so what I'm trying to point out is that when was this book, this was, you published this when I was born, I think in 1985. And so for you, this...
Oh, No, I wrote that in 1973.
Oh, well, even better. Anyways, you're like a Russian scholar. You know, you've been thinking about Russia for a very long time, and so you didn't just consume some news source and then that taught you how to think about this. And so for you, have you been thinking that this was going to happen for a long time, this empire clash, and it's just kind of crazy that you're living through it?
It was just sort of a vague suspicion 50 years ago, but that's what you infer from reading people like Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and the psychologists that they see a certain spiritual, psychological, cultural attitude as being necessary to save the world.
And then the West is like beyond rehabilitation. It's just, or maybe nothing is beyond rehabilitation, but it seems extremely unlikely. And so maybe Russia is a chance for a future of humanity.
Exactly, because through the way Christianity reached Russia, they didn't make the fundamental mistakes about the nature of reality and the nature of human being, and the West is so committed to a kind of individualistic, random management of the physical world that the mental spiritual world, as it doesn't rest on any kind of real cosmology.
Okay, Ray, I'm going to let you go in a second here, but I want to do this advertisement. So you can purchase your newsletter. There is a price change, right? It's $36 for 12 issues now?
Or $10 for 4.
Okay, and you can email that price to raypeetsnewsletter@gmail.com. And are you just backlogged with tons of people or asking for these?
Yeah, it takes sometimes a few weeks to even get an order acknowledged.
Good to know. And then they can also order all your books through the same email. And then ProGest D from Kenogen, you can email Catherine to purchase at Kenogen@gmail.com. Each bottle contains ProGest D contains 3,400 milligrams of progesterone. And Ray, something I really appreciate that you did is you wrote like a little, I don't know, like a snippet of how to use or your thoughts on progesterone for men. And so what was that just, you got so many questions and it inspired you to write, that wasn't like a newsletter, right?
No, it was just a page.
I thought it was really useful and I kind of posted it everywhere. I hope you don't mind that I did that, but no. that was very useful. And I think it clarified things for a lot of people. So I appreciate you doing that. Okay, let's wrap up here. And Ray, just let us know what you're working on for next.
The last newsletter was on cancer, and I'm going to fill in some of the background of that around some of the messenger substances that can be controlled to some extent to even actually not just preventing cancer, but with if you do it in a highly supportive way, even sometimes regress cancer.
Amazing. That was a fast hour. Ray, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And again, guys, we have an hour with Ray and we're not going to exceed that. Georgi Dinkov, thank you so much. I thought we covered a lot of ground. Really appreciate you, Ray. And stay on the line here and we'll end the show. Guys, thank you so much for watching. We have an amazing audience. Really appreciate you guys. We'll be back probably 2 weeks from now. Thanks again. Have a safe weekend and we'll talk to you guys soon. Okay. Bye, everybody.